Chapter 9. Spontaneous Generation. This hypothesis of pathogenesis, or infection stemming from some microbe, has very clearly not supported society since the time of its inception with Louis Pasteur. It has certainly supported varying medical businesses in ultra-profitable ways, centered around the pharmaceutical companies, which rely on people believing in infection and pathogenic organisms that anyone can simply catch from someone else or the outside environment. But in reality, this way of thinking has not supported the people of the planet in any positive way. This theory of germ infection and pathogenesis has accomplished a control of the planet's laws, values, and mores, which the medical establishment and pharmaceutical companies spend a ton of time and energy in promoting. This is, of course, all at the expense of the people, since this way of believing and thinking keeps them sick, whether or not they are manifesting symptoms. The bulk of the planet believes that they can be invaded by a microbe, which can bring them from a state of complete health to complete disease, simply by a matter of exposure. While in many cases this scenario is true when considering parasites, it is complete nonsense when speaking of microorganisms considered to be germs. By their very definition, a parasite is an opportunistic and quite large organism, single or multicelled, that attacks the body, using it for its own gain while giving you nothing in return. This is hardly the case with microorganisms, which exist in a commensalistic relationship with the human organism, i.e., they exist within your body as a natural component and play an important role in the homeostasis of your being. Has any doctor or teacher ever told you this fact? Can you imagine what would happen to the medical profession and the pharmaceutical companies if people suddenly became empowered enough to listen to their intuition on this matter? These present disease care establishments need a constant supply of diseased people to maintain their extreme power and wealth. If the bulk of society were to stop and realize for even a moment that they are in charge of their own personal state of health, and that the healing and health maintenance ability of the body is well within their reach, the medical profession would cease to exist, and the pharmaceutical companies would go out of business. All that is required here is a small shift in consciousness, one that brings people away from the stance of helpless victim to empowered human. To say that any new theory that challenges the germ theory needs to be fully researched before consideration is absurd. Statistics tell all. Just look at the state of health of the average American citizen, and this is all the proof you need. Disease runs rampant in America, and absolute health is indeed the rarity. This is all due to the attitude and aptitude of victim consciousness and irresponsibility for how we live our lives, which is truly what is keeping people sick. This germ, infective, and pathogenic hypothesis simply does not work when considering any stream of logic. Therefore, we need a paradigm shift to get out of the pickle we are in as a species. This involves the more responsible and logical hypothesis first proposed by Pierre Bichamp, just before the rise of Pasteurian thought and popularity. Bichamp's research documented small bodies which were healthy and natural components of every living cell, and he called them microzyma. These microzyma are smaller than even the smallest of cellular organelles, and need a special brand of dark field and ultraviolet-sensitive microscopes to be seen. Once examined, they are witnessed to be completely pleomorphic, which simply means they are able to change shape whenever they please. In effect, they are shapeshifters. And what causes them to change shape? Simply the nature of the environment in which they exist. Around the time of Charles Darwin, this school of thought was called spontaneous generation, which was a very popular school of scientific consideration. The thought was that due to the nature of the environment, energy over time would naturally shift the DNA of any given animal or plant species, thus creating more favorable physical characteristics for survival in future generations. The giraffe was once a short-necked animal, and the stress which created on its neck from the persistent stretching upward to reach an ample food supply of leaves created a shift in its DNA collectively as a species, which brought about the need for a longer neck. Hence, the long-necked giraffes we see today. Darwin challenged this popular thought by proposing an idea of the survival of the fittest. Taking the same example, he suggested that natural DNA varieties of short- and long-necked giraffes once coexisted together. However, the short-necked variety became extinct through a lack of ample food supply. The long-necked variety, however, overcame this problem by their ability to reach more leaves, and thus were stronger and faster to avoid carnivorous predators. In the long run, we have witnessed that Darwin's theories of evolution have gained momentum over the years, whereas spontaneous generation has been left behind. With concern to this issue of evolution, I believe that both theories have relevance. But the idea of spontaneous generation was not left behind by Pierre Bichon. Especially after his discovery of microzyma, he theorized that within the microscopic world, spontaneous generation occurs far more rapidly than in the gross, physical world. He witnessed these microzyma change shape at the earliest sign of an environmental shift, and he further theorized that this shift occurs as a balancing mechanism of some important homeostasis processes undergone by the individual cell. In fact, these microzyma are so pleomorphic that Bichamp witnessed them change into virtually every viral, bacterial, and fungal microbial shape known to science, simply by shifting the environment in which they existed. The medical establishment filters this process through the germ theory, insisting these organisms are monomorphic, arriving on the scene from some unseen place and invading the body for some opportunistic reason. The medical establishment then uses their brand of junk science to classify and categorize these varying forms of microzyma, which freezes them in time as the villains of disease creation. They swab a red and sore throat of a child and take a culture, only to find an abundance of Streptococcus pyogenes. But they are only looking at a single snapshot, taken out of context of a vastly abundant process. If they were to take the right measures in science and dive deeper into the study of those organisms, they would see the bigger picture, the entire movie. They would witness these streptococci change as the child's diet, or other unhealthy habits which precipitated the red and sore throat in the first place, did indeed change. This theory laid out for us by Bichamp holds tremendous potential for the well-being of our planet here and now. It shows us that if we are responsible for our lives, if we manage our diets in a healthy fashion which is consistent with our species, if we maintain our fluid balance properly to persistently cleanse our circulatory system and lymphatic system, if we strive to keep our circulatory and lymphatic systems alkaline, if we take more action to think and emote more positively, productively, and responsibly, then microzyma will have no need to change into the so-called pathogenic and infective microbes as they are classified by medicine. Clearly, the problem is not the microbe. The problem is the individual lifestyle which creates an environmental need for the production of virus, bacteria, and fungus through spontaneous generation from microzyma. These living things are not the opportunistic villains they are made out to be. They are a very methodical class of living organisms called saprophytes. Saprophytes have one major job on the planet, and that is simply to ingest dead organic matter. When an animal or plant dies and falls onto the earth, these organisms rise up to the occasion and eat the now dead organic matter that has become void of life force or nerve energy. They rise up within each cell of the human body to accomplish the same task. In our present society, the average person is replete with excess proteinaceous waste and other dietary toxins that can be eliminated with more responsible eating habits. Microzyma persistently change into the necessary saprophytic forms and seem ubiquitous in most folks, since they are always on the call to eat an endless supply of dead organic waste in the form of clumpy, undigested proteins, which are abundant in the average individual. This, of course, leads to another problem of excess metabolic waste production from the ongoing saprophytic activity within the body, which in and of itself kills more cells through the toxicity it generates. When a medical professional notices a so-called pathogen creating toxins in and around the cells through their metabolic processes, they believe they are attacking the person, when in fact they are simply doing their job in an attempt to purify the person by eating the dead organic material, which is foreign and highly toxic to the body. Once again, the doctor needs to look at the entire movie instead of a single photo taken out of context. Clearly, this Pasteurian way of thinking, this theory everything is based on called the germ theory, has done nothing to productively serve society. Logically, we thus have to look at a more common-sense philosophy, like spontaneous generation, backed up by Bishop's research. Even more clearly, not one sentence of medical cartel research which supports the germ theory can refute the validity of spontaneous generation. Regarding every single piece of propaganda research insisting on microbial pathogenic infection which attacks people, we can say, "Now wait just a minute. There is no evidence now, and never has been any evidence, that these microorganisms are solely responsible for this disease process." Germ theory research relies on the supposition, or more poignantly, the superstition, that just because we see these microorganisms present at the scene of the crime in whatever numbers within a sick person, that they are the cause of the disease and difficulty. This is the same reasoning which would lead one to believe that rats create garbage. No! The rats don't create the garbage on the streets, we create it. The rats are just there doing their job, because the garbage is sitting on the street way too long, especially during a sanitation strike. Throughout history, what most people believe were epidemics created by infection through microorganisms were in reality issues of both external and internal sanitation. But many parents say, "Hey, wait a minute, my kid gets sick through the contagious pattern at her primary school. Once almost half the class and the teacher were out because they passed the same bug amongst themselves for weeks." This is not true, however. They passed nothing between themselves. In fact, they were more likely reacting collectively to the toxicity which runs rampant in most primary schools from molds and other fungus spores, as well as different chemical toxins. Children are more susceptible to these things in the cold weather. These things occur from a stance of group detoxification, which also has energetic components which can certainly influence people who are in close contact on a daily basis. The human body's energy fields are more powerful than most people can even imagine. When one human body is detoxing, an almost magnetic effect radiates out from such individuals, causing the same purifying effects in the immediate environment of people around them. We are not witnessing epidemics or contagious infections. We are witnessing a group healing process which is totally natural to our species. The next logical area of discussion, after knowing this information on spontaneous generation and how all things have purpose, is the benefit of allowing yourself and your child to experience an acute illness from the get-go through to its natural, healthy completion. This is God's way of creating a natural lifetime immunity which leads to a healthy adult life, well adapted to the environment. Yes, this can be very challenging. Yes, this can be frightening. But that is only because you have limited knowledge, and thus faith, in the unlimited potential for healing life and substance given to you by the energetic life force which created you. The intricate wisdom which runs each of the thousands of chemical reactions that go on in each one of your body cells, each and every second of the day, knows far better than any limited, educated, and ego-greed-centered perspective on how to keep the body in a healthy, harmonious homeostasis with the earth and environment in which you were spawned. One key phrase you should always remember, one that will get you back on track and keep you focused no matter what the challenge in life, is this: if I have faith in anything, anything can happen. The sky is the limit. If I have faith in nothing, nothing will ever happen. I am limited only by the boundaries of my own thought. Do you expect to get ill? Then you will. Do you have some kind of psychological dependence for staying ill? Then you will never get well. When you learn to trust the inner power which runs the physical body, over time you develop an actual kinesthetic experience of this very inner power within you, caring for you and keeping your body in perfect order. Symptoms of any kind are the body's method of purification, alerting you to make a change in lifestyle somehow. Hippocrates, the father of medicine, wrote, quote, "Diseases of any kind are crises of purification, of toxic elimination. Symptoms are the natural defenses of the body. We call them diseases, but in fact they are the cure of diseases." Unquote. Our family has observed firsthand that allowing your children to go through illness and come out the other end produces an array of benefits, psychologically, physically, and intellectually. They really do grow through the experience quite naturally, and we often notice greater, more advanced intellectual and physical shifts as a result. Quote, "One of the best ways to ensure your children's health is to allow them to get sick. At first hearing, this concept may sound outrageous. Yet childhood illness, such as measles, mumps, and even whooping cough, may be of key benefit to a child's developing immune system, and it is inadvisable to suppress these illnesses with vaccines. Evidence is also accumulating that routine childhood vaccinations may directly contribute to the emergence of chronic problems such as eczema, ear infections, asthma, and bowel inflammations." Unquote. Philip Incao, MD, medical researcher. Quote, "Contracting and overcoming childhood diseases are a part of a developmental process that actually helps develop a healthy, robust adult immune system able to meet the challenges that inevitable encounters with viruses and bacteria will present later on." Unquote. Harris Coulter, PhD, from Vaccination, Social Violence and Criminality, 1990. Quote, "There is no need to protect children from contracting infectious diseases of childhood. These diseases are there to prime and mature their immune system. Chronic ill health, colds, otitis media, and upper and lower respiratory tract diseases are well documented in vaccinated children. A well-nourished child will go through rubella, whooping cough, chickenpox, and all the rest with flying colors." Unquote. V. Scheibner, Immunization, The Medical Assault on the Immune System, Australia, 1993. Quote, "Vaccination subverts the immune system's natural response, the ability to clear that virus. The rash is the body's eradication of the virus. If you do not have a typical measles rash, you are not invoking an adequate cellular immune response. Measles may persist in the body then." Unquote. Andrew Wakefield, MD, NVIC Conference, 2002.